You're listening to DraftKings Network. You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Today, exclusive to our YouTube, Le Batard and Friends. Go find it. Subscribe if you have not already. We're putting all sorts of stuff on there that you can find only on there. Jessica, who is otherwise off today, is coming in to have her pumpkin carving contest with Greg Cody. And Greg Cody, before we get to Ron McGill, is somebody who wants you to check out his podcast, The Greg Cody Show, featuring Greg Cody, where I believe, and I'd like to get his viewpoint on this, that he again did what he did to us in New York, which is once he got on stage, felt the love, dropped into the narcissism, forgot everything that he was supposed to do and just sort of didn't notice that the crowd was dying in front of him on the microphone, just kept churning through it. And then me and Mike Ryan saw the horrified look on his son's face. Someone rescue my father, because he's going to do another 7 minutes without noticing that the crowd has gone dead.
The best part about that is I don't know. I think that is what he had planned. I don't even know if, which is, it kind of makes it worse for him. And it kind of leads to his narcissism. It's just like, let me talk about me.
Greg, when you get like that, do you even notice there is a crowd? Like, what happens there? Do you forget there's a crowd?
Yeah, I go into a zone. But I'll tell you what, thank you. Thank you for those comments, because it was a fantastic audience. I killed it on stage. They were chanting my name before and after my appearance. It was fantastic. It's true that I was cut off prematurely. It was almost like a modern-day Hard Net workout. I had plenty of material. Some of the material I couldn't get to, I do say on the new podcast, including something public, pumpkin carving related. So you'll want to listen to that podcast.
Great tease.
Thank you.
Excellent tease. Let's go back to New York. When we did an event in New York, we rehearsed it. We had dry runs. And then Greg Cody, who was supposed to come out and find his mark and just make some jokes, New York jokes. Instead, he just decided to spread his arms and enjoy the applause.
We had rehearsals.
And he shows up. And yeah, we.
Some of us did.
Sorry.
Yeah. And Greg was supposed to start the show, get us started off with a big fun surprise that longest we practiced before the show. Longest rehearsal ever.
This was the longest part of a long rehearsal.
They were really long.
It
really,
it was like 8 hours for a 90-minute show.
It was absurd.
We were forever.
We were talking to the crew, and they're like, this always takes 45 minutes. I don't know why this is taking so long. And then they're like, let's order lunch. And we're like, can we just finish this?
Yeah,
so we'll go get our own lunch.
We're
like,
union
we need an
break.
Hour for lunch.
Yeah, it was a union thing. They were to blame. And like, I'm just pro-union, don't get me wrong.
And after all that practice, Greg Cody just blew the entrance of the show, and we had to start over.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Yes.
Actually, no, not yes. It's just gentlemen, because this is an unrelenting ocean of sausage I'm looking at. Gentlemen, may I present to you Greg Cody.
Forgot what he was supposed to.
Wow.
You screwed it up.
You already screwed up. Let's do it again.
Yeah, you
we did this
up.
Like seven
you
times.
You screwed it up.
Do it again. The
do
song's
again.
For you. You're taking the applause.
He
quit it.
He was taking the praise. He got caught up.
No. Let's go back and do it again.
What we rehearsed.
We did it like seven times today. He got it wrong every time.
Are you attending a Laker game tonight? My God.
Let's go. Do it again.
Don't walk from it.
Ladies and gentlemen. Just gentlemen. Greg Cody!
Oh, yeah. You nailed it the second time.
Look how he's just got a giant smile on his face. Just remembering what it was like.
The song is yours.
Start spreading the news. I'm grieving today.
So good.
Because Zion won't be part of it. New York!
Oh.
New York! Well, it's a glorious evening.
What?
Soon?
You wanted that second round of applause, didn't
you? Not a helpful voice in the bunch there, Greg. You notice that?
You know what? I power through it. You know, the first time they started the music too soon, they rushed my cue. But the second time, I was there, man.
If you're going to rehearse, do it in front of a live audience. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
Right. Make it feel like the actual thing.
Incredible.
Sorry, Mike.
What is your line on I show up, man? I come here, man?
I come here, man.
Yeah.
Greg just gave us the equivalent. I was there, man.
I shoulder through it.
It's the best you can do when you do it with Greg Cody and Stugatz. If they show up, that's them clearing the bar.
It's like the football coaches always say, the greatest ability is availability. I'm not promising excellence. What I'm promising is I'm going to be there.
I'll be there.
Right. Okay, mm-hmm. And so your son was worried about putting you on at 10:30. How many Miller Lights? How responsible are you for the enormity of that VIP bill?
Oh, luckily there were some fans of the show who were buying me Miller Lights, which I didn't ask for, but that was a fantastic surprise. Right. I was a little worried you scheduled me so late in the show. I will say that, but I minded my P's and Q's. As my wife will tell you, I was fine to drive home. I killed the set. I mean, that was acclaimed. Variety did a piece on my 6 minutes up there. And, you know, it was just great. The whole evening was fantastic.
Chris, why does he remember this so differently than we remember? Why does he remember his set so differently than we remember his set?
Because they were chanting his name. So that's just it. In his mind, on the front end and back end, he heard chanting. So he's like, what? I crushed it.
Yep, they liked it.
And he kind of did. He's like Stugatz. He always wins.
Mm-hmm.
He went up there and just in a monotone, hello, my wife didn't want me. And it's just like, and the crowd loves it. They just eat out of his hand.
Well, it was a me sandwich. You know, there were Cody chants front and back. It was just.
Who cares about what's in the middle?
I mean, it was pretty good. And a lot
of
the material.
He was just getting to the good stuff, right?
Yeah, a lot of the material I didn't get to because I was bum rushed off the stage.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what you can find in the Greg Cody Show featuring Greg,
right,
Cody,
Greg Cody
out today. Right. Which I will never advertise under any circumstances and will have no reasons to ever send you there.
It may be our best episode yet. Check it out. The Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody.
You have a question for Ron McGill, who's been patiently sitting here listening to your yammering from his office. We are, again, grateful that Ron McGill makes this one of the most popular segments that we have around here. And we encourage you, if you want your help or your money, your care for the animals, to go straight to the animals without getting clogged up in bureaucracy. We encourage you to check out the Ron McGill Endowment. Just find it on Google. It's easy to find.
Ron, I do have a question, and this headline really surprised me. Florida manatees dying in record numbers amid food scarcity. It surprises me because they're herbivores, and isn't the food readily available? What's going on?
Ah, it's not readily available. That's the problem. They are herbivores, but the main part of their food is seagrass. And we're having these massive seagrass die-offs. You know, when they talk about things like in Biscayne Bay, the fertilizers, the pollutants that are going into the water are causing these massive seagrass die-offs. And that's leading to starvation for manatees. That's what they're dying of. It's really sad.
Ron, when you look at the things that we're doing to the environment and the way that we're harming the animal kingdom, you imagine what kind of things are going to happen in 10 years, 15 years that you see off in the distance that you're already getting heartbroken by because you know we're not going to correct it.
Well, you know, emissions are one thing. Pollutants in the sky, you know, our carbon footprint is so huge now. So what we're doing is we're losing species. I mean, at an astronomical rate. They're talking about in the next 50 years, we can lose 1 million species. And Dan, when you think about it, you know, every species is connected to us in one way or another. That's why they call it the web of life. And you might not notice, you know, an insect disappears here, but if that insect is a pollinator for a fruit that you like to eat, and all of a sudden that fruit's not being produced because there's no pollinator producing it, it has a domino effect. I mean, so many animals depend on so many different animals, and we depend on all those animals. So when you talk about 1 million species being extinct in the next 50 years, that's astronomical. That's bigger. That's a faster extinction rate than the time of the dinosaurs. And that's horrific. I mean, development. You look at development. You know, the human population is growing and growing. People are moving in developing areas. You know, I think direct influence on us is going to be things just like as simple as fresh water, just drinkable, potable, fresh water. People don't realize that many countries around the world don't have that. And I worry that the U.S. may be one of those countries that's going to have challenges regarding clean drinking water just because of what we're doing to our water bodies. You know, but I don't want to get into all that really depressing stuff. This show is a happy show. I just heard freaking Cody singing New York, New York. And then we're going down to this. It's depressing.
Thank you, Ron. Appreciate that. I do have a quick follow-up about the manatees because I love manatees. They're so lovable and gentle. What is the solution to this food scarcity? Because it seems like there must be something being done or that could be done.
There are things being done. You know, Audubon is working a lot with the state of Florida. They're trying to work with the sugar industry, a lot of the big agricultural industries, to try to alter the way they're using their fertilizers so the runoff isn't causing these incredible die-offs in the bay. You know, these are all people that are all trying to survive. I don't want to paint like sugar is the bad people. These are not bad people. We're just trying to survive. We've got to make compromises. So the state is now working to, you know, we're trying to do these big messages to people. Don't be fertilizing your lawns and such in the summertime when you have all the rains that cause the runoffs into the bay, because when all these fertilizers, all these you know, additives that we're adding to our land are going leaching into the water, that's what's causing the die-offs of the seagrass. And that leads to the, you know, the starvation of the manatees. So it's just a matter of education, getting people to understand that, you know, by making these small changes can lead to big results in the end, but we've all got to do it. Everybody's got to get involved. And that's, you know, it's a tough thing. Money, unfortunately, is the great corruptor. And people look at the instant gratification of how much money you're making by what you're doing right now and not worried about what it leads to down the line.
Ron, which animal is the best singer?
I would say it's probably the lyrebird. Listen to the lyrebird. Mm. It is a bird that can make so many different types of sounds and imitate all kinds of sounds and sing so beautifully. I mean, you know, the best singer, of course, is going to be a bird, unless you want to go into the sperm whale. I mean, the sperm whale, the humpback whale. If you want to listen to the song of the humpback whale, it's intoxicating. I've been very fortunate to actually hear it live in the water. It's an intoxicating sound. It takes you to another dimension. It really is amazing.
You recreate sounds all the time here. You're not a piano bar, but you can't. Usually, if you can do the sound, you just do it. You don't have even a comparable on how awe-inspiring that sound is?
The lyrebird? No, I mean the humpback whale. You know, everybody's heard it. Kind of, I mean, it's haunting, but it's intoxicating at the same time.
That's terrible singing.
Well, but he's talking about
the lyrebird. Sounds like me, right?
Well, I thought the entire audience was looking for the good joke to make on the lyrebird. Stugatz instead chose to make that joke as soon as
it's
called
lyrebird, L-Y-R-E, not L-I-A-R. Okay.
I've never even heard of that.
Well, that's the thing about this show, Dan. You see, we expose people to new things and the wonders of nature. So I urge everyone to go to the lyrebird, see if you can Google the song of the lyrebird, the different songs that it makes. Oh, you know what else you should get? A cool song, the Aura Pendula. Look at, check up the Aura Pendula and Google the sound it makes. It sounds like it's drinking water. It's a fantastic sound.
Spelling, please, for people who don't know.
Aura Pendula. I think it's O-R-A-P-N-D-U-L-A.
Okay.
You made it a Latin word. Is it a,
it's... Aura Pendula. It's a tropical American bird found mostly in Latin American countries. So I'm going to attribute it to being of Hispanic descent.
Ron, I want to suggest something, and this is going to be a big fundraiser for your foundation. You do an album of you doing animal sounds from across the wild kingdom. I guarantee you that would sell. I'm serious.
I love you, Greg. You're the best. You really are.
Ron,
thank you, Greg.
Can animals be bilingual?
Yes. Animals can learn different languages, different dialects of their different cultures. For instance, chimpanzees, a lot of primates can adjust to different cultures. Some big cats, some lions, you know, there are different sounds that are found in different geographical locations. And sometimes when those individuals cross the location into another culture, another population, they can adapt to learn those sounds.
Are they like humans where it's beneficial to learn more languages at a young age, or does it not matter?
I think it's absolutely beneficial. You know, Billy, I'm really proud of you, these questions today. I really am, because usually your questions are absolutely dumb as a stump, but these are really good.
Oh, wow. Unnecessary.
Udonis Haslam is trending with Serbia. I don't know if he's gone to Serbia. I don't know if he's looking.
Oh,
I don't know if he's looking for the Jokic brothers, but it is now trending. Udonis Haslam and Serbia.
I would greenlight that project just based off of that elevator pitch.
Whittingham, do you have anything for Ron McGill?
I do. Ron, which animal would you most want to be on a jury of your peers?
Which animal would I most want to be on the jury of my peers? A bonobo.
Okay, not the answer I was expecting. A good
because
one.
It is a very intelligent animal. It is an animal that abhors violence. It settles everything with sex, and is, as a primate goes, it's the pygmy chimpanzee.
Baby.
It is just a fantastic animal. A fantastic, I mean, look at the social structure that they settle everything with sex. Everything, there's never a physical conflict fight. And it could be, you know, female on female, male on male, whatever it is, it's solved by providing sexual pleasure and gratification for the person that might be in the conflict.
How is one settle things with sex?
Yeah, go on, Ron.
Well, okay.
With a bonobo.
What happens? Let's say, these two females get into an argument about some food, okay? What happened? Did I miss something?
My liar joke was bad.
Anyway, so what they'll do is they feel the tension going over the food, they will actually do, I don't know if I can say this, but it's kind of like a scissor routine. They get into a scissor position pleasure each other that way.
Wow.
And that immediately reduces the stress and it reduces Urban the aggression because they're pleasuring each other that way.
Go ahead and look it up.
We're not doing that one. We are not doing it. Ron, have you ever seen a hamster in the wild?
I've not seen a hamster in the wild, no.
Because there's this theory that they are just bred in pet stores, and that's the only place anyone could ever see a hamster.
Wait. Hold on.
We're not reading the scissor thing.
That howling you hear is the happiest I've heard Billy in years.
He just said, oh, no.
Just listening to Chris Whittingham look at Urban Dictionary. Continue. I'm sorry, Ron. What were you saying about hamsters not existing in the wild?
No, I believe they have a wild ancestor. I don't think it's the true hamster that we see in pet shops anymore. I think those animals have been bred over, you know, hundreds of years. Probably to become pets and no longer are the same animal that they originated from in the wild. But, you know, it's a type of rodent. Let's just leave it at that.
Have we emptied the clip on domesticated animals, or is there an animal out there that no one's thought to domesticate that could be the next big sensation?
Ooh.
Like platypi or something?
No. But the platypus cannot be domesticated. It's venomous. It actually has a venomous
spur. Yeah, but the kids will love it.
I can't think of anything that's going to lead to be domesticated. No.
The platypus you thought was a harmless animal. What kind of damage can the platypus do with its venom?
It's got a venomous burr. It can make you really sick. It's not going to kill you, but it can make you really, really sick.
The pig is right on the line. That was delightful. I don't know who that belonged to, but it was very
nice sound,
it was
yeah.
very soothing. Mm-hmm. Thank you for adding it to our lives. The pig, what is right on the line of domestication where I know that you object. You are traditionalist when it comes to domesticated animals. You don't believe anybody should have, never mind chimpanzees or monkeys or any of that stuff.
No,
but
no, Dan, I'm not a purist in that sense. I mean, there are certainly some kind of reptiles. There's like the bearded dragon, there's the ball python. These are actually good pets because they have been bred under human care for many, many years. They don't get large, they don't get aggressive. And you know, the fact of the matter is there are people who live in apartments or small townhouses, they don't have a yard, they can't have a big dog or some of the more traditional pets. And I think, you know, having some of the fish in a fish tank, I think I had a fish tank as a kid, and it was one of the most wonderful experiences for me, learning how to set up that whole ecosystem. So there are certainly animals that are not necessarily domesticated that make a decent pet. I'm just talking about these, you know, dangerous animals and animals that get incredibly stressed by being kept in captivity just to, you know, to satiate someone's ego.
Ron, what's the purpose of silverfish? Like, what do they do?
Billy, you're a flipping genius. They provide food for a lot of other fish, and they also feed on algal growth. So they help keep areas clean in the river. They help, maintain the food chain. They're an important part of the food chain.
No, I meant like the insect, the one that's like always in your like clothes or shoes.
Oh, silverfish, the little things yeah. that are in books and stuff.
Yeah.
They will also be eaten by other animals. Other, you know, insectivores will eat them. Other than that, all they do is kind of chew away at the paper in my book sometimes. It ticks me off.
Can they eat your brain if they crawl in your ears?
No, they can't eat your brain. Oh. They can't crawl in your ear and eat your brain.
Tony told me they could.
Who's Tony?
Who the hell is Tony?
Hey, Ron.
What does Tony know?
Hey, Ron.
There's Tony.
If you were the commissioner of all animals, and I think you should be, would you abolish ant farms?
I think ant farms are fantastic. I would not abolish them. I had an ant farm as a kid, and I used to be fascinated by watching the plastic looking both ways. And you see the ants making all those little deliveries and creating the ant paths and all that stuff. I think it's just a wonderful introduction to nature.
Yeah, but you know? Aren't you imprisoning the ants?
Not if you're providing them with the food and everything that they need. No, they ants don't go out and, you know, go to football games and play softball or do any of those social things. By providing a structure that's big enough to satiate their social needs along with the food and the structure, what you're doing is you're providing them with a wonderful sense of security while providing yourself with a wonderful window into the world of ants that many people seem to despise and may learn to be fascinated by.
But out in the wild, thousands of ants can get together and carry a rubber tree plant. Mm-hmm. That's what a song once told me.
That's right.
Ain't no rubber tree plants in an ant farm.
No. They don't carry in a rubber tree plant in the ant farm because you're giving them food that's a lot easier. Let me ask you something, Greg. If you had to go out and lay cinder blocks all day long, and that's how you had to make a living, and you had the choice to do that or be behind a microphone and sing New York, New York for a living, which one would you choose to do?
Oops, there goes another rubber tree.
He was just waiting for you to stop talking so he
could
sing
his song. I would do the
latter.
Your point's well taken.
He wasn't even listening to you.
My point is animals will do the path of least resistance, okay? If it takes 1,000 of them to lift up a rubber tree plant, but they can take one at a time and have everything catered to them where they don't have to lift that rubber tree plant, I think they're going to go with the easier route.
So they're lazy animals.
They're not lazy. They conserve energy. Remember, you know, animals don't live in a world where they can go to, you know, McDonald's whenever they want and order their, you know, number three. They have to be able to have a reliable source of food, and they have to be able to kind of pace it out so they know they can survive. You see, we're the ones that are spoiled because we have all these things at our fingertips. That's why they tell you, you know, why we shouldn't feed wild animals in the wild, because they become dependent on that. They lose their ability to gather their own food, or they start associating humans with food, and that's when they become a danger. So the bottom line is animals will always take the easier route. Always is a big word, but generally speaking, they will always take the easier route as long as they're able to survive. They're not, you know, all hung up on getting the best steak or getting the best meal. They just want to get what's going to keep them alive and allow them to survive to the next day and to reproduce.
Ron, are there animals that are capable of enjoying music or sports? So, like, sometimes we'll see, like, a cat will sneak into a game or, like, birds will sneak into an arena. Could they be just kind of enjoying the music and going for free? And should we ticket them?
to your original question, animals do, in fact, there are animals that do, in fact, enjoy music. Mm. There are animals that do, in fact, watching things like games. There's a million YouTube videos of dogs and cats glued to a television screen, watching whatever video is being played at the time. So there's obviously some sense of entertainment or at least engagement involved in that. We do know there are animals that seem to settle to music, that can actually go to sleep to music. So yes, I think those external things are enjoyed by animals, whether they know that there's a game going on at a stadium and they're going to consciously say, I got to get into the stadium because I want to see the game. I don't think so.
In your childhood, Ron, you mentioned you had an ant farm, you mentioned a fish tank, any other things like that. How early did your interest in this stuff start, and what other things did populated your childhood on that front?
Well, it started very early, because when I finally moved to the house that I grew up in when I was 12 years old, I was on 5 acres. My mom still lives on that house. And it was out in a place down here called the Redland. And I would try to save whatever animal I saw injured. I've had everything from a barn owl that was hit by a car. I rehabilitated it in the laundry room in my mom's house and on my parents' house. And, you know, if you ever hear a barn owl, when they get alarmed, they will actually, they'll make the sound that goes, like that. It's a god-awful scream that they do, and it's frightening. And I never told my mom that I had the barn owl in the laundry room, so she went in to do the laundry room, and the barn owl made that noise. No. And my poor mother almost had a heart attack, and she's screaming my name, and she thought some monster was in there. So that was another thing. Then I also, this was when I was young and stupid, okay, but I used to raise Gaboon vipers. This is one of the deadliest snakes in the world. What? It's got the longest fang of any venomous snake in the world. And I used to raise them. When my grandmother passed away, I converted her bedroom, which was on the other side of the house, into a Gaboon viper breeding room. And these Gaboon vipers and my dad didn't really know how dangerous they were or anything. He just said, you know, as long as they're locked up, they're not going to go. But they're really dangerous. And when you walked into that room, Gaboons, what they do when they want to threaten you, they inflate themselves with air and they go. So it sounds like a bunch of big balloons blowing up and deflating, and it's very frightening. So my dad would walk into that room and he'd call me. My dad, he never could call me Ron, because my dad was Cuban, had a very strong Cuban accent. He didn't speak really good English. So he always called me Ronnie, and he'd go, Ronnie, Ronnie, venga acá, Ronnie. And he'd start talking bad words in Spanish and tell me, you know, what the hell are all these things doing here and why are they making those sounds? But back then I would breed them because Gaboon vipers give birth to live babies. And back then, this was 35 years ago, I could sell the babies for like $200 a piece, and one female would have 20, 25 babies. So you're talking about a guy who's like 21, 22 years old, and one female has a bunch of babies, and I'm selling these things, and I'm getting like $4,000 or $5,000 when I'm 21 years old back in the 80s. It was huge.
A business.
And they found out how dangerous they were, and they told me how to get rid of them.
It's like selling snakes on the black market, I mean, you would be mad if someone was doing that today.
How many did you have? Like, there's a room in your house? Your family is...
I had three pairs, so I had six of them, stationed in different areas of the room there. You know, with certain heat lamps and the total photo period and everything had to be done perfectly so that they would reproduce. But I was permitted. I had my license. I had all the things, and I only sold to permitted people. But I wouldn't do that today. I mean, these are things that you do when you're young and you're stupid. I mean, I'm lucky I never really got hurt badly getting bitten by one of those things, because as I look back, I tend to be overconfident in working with them. And I think it's just, a product of being young, male, thinking you're invincible. But looking back, it was not very intelligent.
Put together for us next week, let's not forget this, I'd like top five dumbest things that Ron McGill has done around the animals, but I don't want to unleash that. I want him to have time
to
prepare that list. And in the interim, let's be like the CBS Sunday morning show and just lay out here for a second to hear the aforementioned lying bird.
Ha 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 ha
Come on, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
It is. It's so beautiful.
Thank you.
Listen to that. Listen to the variety, the diversity of the sounds.
Yeah.
God, you guys don't appreciate things sometimes. I'm sorry.
Exactly.
Ron, good talking to you.
Have a good one, guys. Take care.
See you, Ron.
Zagaki.
Zagaki. I have a quick aside. Do you mind?
The segment's over.
Oh, well, I want to say it anyway because it's important. He referenced Gaboon Viper, Ron did, which really brought back memories because there used to be an old-time comedian named Orson Bean, who just died recently. He was hit by a car in L.A. In 2020. And Orson Bean used to go on the Johnny Carson show, and he would always reference Gaboon Viper because he thought it was a funny phrase. So when you say Gaboon Viper, you think Orson Bean. Thank you, Ron, for that, because it brought back a fond memory.
And rest in peace, Orson Bean.
Thank you.
Yep.
Ron is no longer...
He's been gone for 5 minutes.
Okay.
So is Orson.
You have been talking to no one.
I'm talking to the crowd here. I'm not doing this for the air.
Nice tribute to Orson Bean, though.
Thank you.
We erred in not doing that sooner.
A tribute to Orson Bean?
Yeah.
Can't have too much Orson Bean talk. He just died. Give the man some respect. And what a way to go.
We got hit by a car, didn't you just say that?
Twice. He got hit by two cars.
Right.
The second one caused his demise.
What do you mean?
That's the way to go?
What a way to go.
I mean, I meant that like, oh, what a terrible way to go. Right?
You made it sound like
it was delightful.
You made it sound
like going in your sleep.
I haven't heard anyone that happy since Stugatz learned that Marty Schottenheimer had died.
So unfair.
It's the same tone.
Mike, Marty Schottenheimer died.
It's the same tone that he delivered, that he just delivered. And what a way to go, as if Orson Bean had died, having multiple orgasms.
No, I mean, you know how it is. When somebody falls into a volcano pit and dies in hot, molten lava, you go, what a way to go. Wow.
I should play it back for you so you can hear how you said it.
You said it in a way.
I know.
That was
I didn't mean to because it's terrible.
You said it like it's the way you would like to
go. Yes, that's what it sounded like on the back of a garbage truck.
We all have a way we want to go.
You get hit once, not twice. I mean, it's crazy.
Did you know? Did you know Orson Bean's real name was Dallas Bourne or Dallas Burroughs?
I did not know that.
How about that?
Was that just his hometown?
No, he was born Dallas Frederick Burroughs. He was born in Burlington, Vermont.
Buh. Do you have a soundboard of buzz?
Buh. Buh.
Buh. You do. You have a variety of buzz. That's nice.
Buh.
ESPN didn't try and get that from us?
Buh. 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 Make a song.
It's like an opera. This is the Lying Bird. Beautiful songbird. What a beautiful! It's got stubble. It comes into your house. Appleton Fraud.
I think I can figure it out if I get the right inflection in the voice. So that's got to be my D note.
All right, let's.
I want to hear you work this out.
Let's see it. Let's hear it composed in real time.
Is that more of a C or a D, Roy?
So you're going for Mary Had a Little Lamb.
I think it's a B, actually.
Is this my D?
Yeah.
So that's my D. All right. Hang on. All right. Let's see. So this would be E.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Don Levitard.
That bear was not on Hal's deck. Excuse me. I was going to say desk. I meant deck. I botched it. Terrible. $2. Penalty box, 2 minutes. See ya. Home for the day. Walk to the ocean. What do you want me to do? Super Bowl week, Dan. I didn't ask for any of this. And I have no money. Aqua?
Stugatz.
Walk to the ocean.
What?
Walk to the ocean.
I really have
here.
No money.
Get out of here. Get out of here. I'll do the show without you.
I don't like.
This is the Dan Levitard Show with the Stugatz.
Stugatz came in today, Whittingham, demanding apologies. It's always good when Stugatz demands apologies for not understanding that Bob Huggins is someone that you associate with the warmth of a player goes down with an injury and the coach comes out and loves him up in a gesture that we can all get behind. The coach coming out to tend to the injured player the way Mike Vrabel loves to do as a former player. Are you willing to apologize, Whittingham, publicly?
Yes, I'm willing to apologize. I'm willing to acknowledge that Stugatz was right. I still would not have Bob Huggins top of my list for a caring this touch.
The apologies don't need
just
explanation.
Say sorry, man.
The apologies, I'm telling you, fellas, people out there, all of you, just say I'm sorry and get out. Don't, I'm sorry, and also, here's where I was right.
Stugatz, right.
Here's where I was less wrong.
I'm sorry.
Accept it.
I believe I also owe you an apology for this because I do not associate Bob Huggins with the warmth.
Just say sorry.
The heroic warmth. I'm sorry that in 2010, Bob Huggins went on the court and he ran on the court with his jumpsuit and he got very close to his player, uncomfortably close. Probably smelled like what? Old Spice? What are you thinking the scent is coming in from?
Old Spice he put on like 2 days ago.
So it's the faint must of two-day-old Old Spice underneath his warm-up sweats.
Yes. A tinge of sweat.
There's a fragrance, right? There, as he is loving up his player, but Stugatz is right, and we are sorry. Bob Huggins, when you look at him, you associate him with great warmth. The Golden State Warriors are suddenly overwhelming.
My God.
Again.
They're playing defense. I think they're the best defensive team in the NBA. And if they're going to be that with Steph Curry playing the way he's playing, they're going to be really good. Like almost unbeatable. They're giving up less than 100 points per game.
Top of the league in net rating, in defensive rating as well, 98.2.
Crazy.
And Steph scoring 50 last night.
He did last night.
The Atlanta Hawks. But, I mean, he's going out there and he's putting up Steph games. And last night against the Hawks, he goes. The Hawks broadcasters got really mad that he went and got the cheap 50 at the end and went from 48 to 50 because he wanted the round number. What are you laughing about? I love this new Greg Cody jury
duty, Greg Cody. I love you're letting everything in sports go. You're telling everyone relax. These are the things that you used to rail against. Now, right. Now you're mad at the Hawks broadcasters for giving voice to a thing that you normally would give voice to.
Well, to quote Stugatz, the Atlanta Hawks broadcasters, they got to get over themselves. I mean, come on, these guys are always railing and complaining about something. How about don't let Steph Curry get to 48 in the first place?
Right.
Play a little defense. But I do wonder, is Steph Curry better than ever? Because when he had that serious injury a few years ago, you had to wonder, is he going to be the same when he comes back? He's better than ever, right?
He's playing really well. The surprising thing, I don't know if he's better than ever, but he's certainly playing well. The surprising thing is, without Klay Thompson, the other guys have gotten better. Like, they just got, like, the young guys, like Jordan Poole and Wiggins has gotten better just being coached by Steve Kerr and in that environment. They've become a really good team and a really good team defensively. They're beating you in different ways now. It used to be, hey, we'll beat you 130 to 125. Now they're beating you 115 to 97. It's crazy.
Guys, I have breaking news regarding the NBA. We talked about the Jokic brothers a little bit during the local hour. We talked about the Morris twins and their history.
We talked about during McGill that Udonis Haslam and Serbia were trending together, and we are sending Meadowlark correspondence to Serbia now to see if Udonis Haslam is indeed hunting through Serbia for the Jokic brothers.
So after the bump took place, Marcus Morris tweeted out, the brother of Markieff, the Heat player, waited till bro turned his back, SMH noted, and then an emoji of a hand taking a note. And then a mysterious Twitter account called Jokic Brothers, Jokic Brothers,
oh boy,
with no avatar, tweeted to Marcus Morris, you should leave this the way it is instead of publicly threatening our brother. Your brother made a dirty play first. If you want to make a step further, be sure we will be waiting for you. Signed, Jokic Brothers.
Oh, no.
Now, that's just a Twitter avatar that's an egg, right? But Mike Singer, a Nuggets reporter at the Denver Post, has confirmed that that is indeed the Twitter account of the Jokic Brothers.
Oh, man. If you're Marcus Morris, you leave it alone right there.
So, that's it. With the note emoji, that's where you that the last word leave you the last yes. word you're speaking if, is the note emoji.
If you want to make a step further, be sure we will be waiting for you.
Yes, I am sure of it. And what I'm not sure is that is the Jokic Brothers account, because I thought that was a spoof account. And it's what I would write if I were creating a spoof account.
Mike Singer, reputable, verified Twitter account that covers the Denver Nuggets, says just got a text from Jokic's brother.
They're going to come to Miami. They're going to come to Miami.
Wow.
It's war.
And we have, for a long time, a lot of people in this audience right now are saying, like, oh, stop with the posturing, Jimmy Butler. Stop with the I'll see you outside 3 minutes after the fight. You could have handled it while you were there.
But no one ever goes outside after the game and fights. I mean,
not anymore. They meet by a bus sometimes. I think the aforementioned Carmelo Anthony situation was meeting by a bus, and a lot of people were alleging that was about disrespect toward his then wife, correct? Isn't that was a Kevin Garnett? Those are two not. This is a different class of menace we're talking about here, though. The Jokic brothers and the Morrises combined with Jimmy Butler, this is not Carmelo and Kevin Garnett.
No, this is what the Jokic brothers do for a living. I mean, they meet you by a bus.
They hunt you down. Yeah. They hunt you down. Yes. Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Is what the Jokic brothers put on their tax forms hunt you down for a living?
Zach Randolph did go into a locker room seeking out Kendrick Perkins one time in 2012. And was fine.
Zach Randolph had the kind of the reputation and menace that Udonis Haslam does. The thing about Udonis that's interesting to me is that Zach Randolph had a couple of public incidents that had some details on them, like his friends will beat you with a pool cue if you charge too much on your marijuana, that gave him that reputation. The thing about the Haslam reputation that is so impressive is he has that reputation, universal and consensus, without a spot on the record, without something to show you, hey, where does that come from? It's all reputation on based on where he comes from, which is the grittiest part of Miami. But what are the incidents on Udonis's record where you would have something
stare,
like Z-Bo? Yeah. But it's all reputation. Like, we've never...
There's a Hansbrough foul, the Antoine marijuana incident, the Dwight Howard stuff, the face-off with David West, who is also reputed to be a tough guy, and neither guy backed down, but nothing came of it. But you're right. It's all just, he's all back alley without a high-profile incident on the court, or off the court for that matter.
I think, you correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't want to, as my feud with Udonis Haslam escalates as he rips me in GQ, I don't want to suggest that reputation is not earned, but it would be funny if one day, after talking about this for decades, like Suge Knight, he just got knocked out by a hairdresser in a salon one time while he was in it, because that happened to Suge Knight. I'm not even making that up.
You're not helping yourself out here, man.
No, it would just be kind of great after decades of obsessing about, you better be careful about UD, if it could somehow be unmasked. It wasn't like Suge Knight wasn't a bad man. He just had a bad night that one time he went in to see a hairdresser who knocked him out. It's that Suge Knight had an earned reputation. I'm not saying Udonis's reputation is not earned. It's just consensus, and it's fairly amazing given that it doesn't have anything on it that we actually know about, making it all the more mysterious.
I think it's ridiculous, getting back to the Jokic brothers against Morris's. I think it's ridiculous that we're now down to these two adversaries tweeting out menacing stares at each other. It's sort of weak. If you want to do something really serious, what you do is you put out a threatening, gun-wielding video like Damon Arnett. I mean, it's sort of silly just to do it over Twitter.
Not like the Raiders. You know. The Raiders don't
put out
have
a video
problems.
Of West Side Story, Jets versus Sharks.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, yeah. I'm just saying, talk again. To have this tweet war is a little bit weak.
Okay, well, but we don't need to escalate it. It's enough to have the Jokic's hunting people and Udonis Haslam slogging through Serbia. We don't have to go to the real news item the Raiders in an even worse situation than they've already found themselves with Gruden and Ruggs.
Oh,
they've got a player waving and threatening people with guns in a video.
Why do you have UD with a glass jaw? I mean, what are you doing there? I mean, if UD took someone to a back alley, Dan, he would end them.
Yes. Yeah. What you're doing there is taking the predictable easy stance and manipulating my words. I did not say that. I just
said it'd be funny.
I said it would, and it would be funny. It would be funny. I'm not suggesting it can happen. I'm saying that if it did happen, it would be funny if it happened.
I'm with you.
A couple fun details here on this new Twitter account at Jokic Brothers. It was just created for the sole purpose of going at Marcus Morris.
Oh boy!
It follows only one Twitter account, a Denver Nuggets player, Jamal Murray.
I love it. This is the spoof account I would create. You're telling me it's real, and it's how if I were making a spoof account trying to get into the news to escalate the fight between menacing people, I would write the same words as you're telling me. You're telling me this is fact. Through a Twitter egg, the Jokic's have just created an account to drag in the other Morris brother to see if this ends here. You better not talk shit with your notes emojis, with your emojis that are saying you're taking notes, because we're taking notes. We're also taking notes.
It's fun, but the NBA needs to tread lightly, honestly. This situation needs some interjecting, because you have two brothers that have premium access to games. They're credentialed, or at least are wearing lanyards here. They have one incident where they threatened to go on the court and had to be restrained. And now we have public threats being made, or veiled threats, not so veiled, to NBA players. Honestly, if they make their way down to Miami, first off, they shouldn't be allowed to. Jokic needs to step in.
Hold on.
Because this isn't just on the court. If there are two volatile brothers that are in the stands that could get real ugly. Stugatz, and it doesn't have anything to do with the players on the court.
What Mike is doing is ever producing on behalf of the NBA. If you don't actually want an ugly incident, I'm sure many people are listening to this saying, what are you talking about? Just knock it off with the soap opera drama. But Mike is getting to a place where he's limited freedoms here because you don't want one of these things to actually escalate into something terrible in Miami. But before we go down that particular path, I would like to enjoy this story a little more because you've got in our chat, you've got Parakeet Cortez saying Jokic was dirty all night, hitting Bam in the face, deserved to be shanked.
Whoa.
I don't think he meant for that to be out there, Dan.
Deserved. It's a joke. It's the same thing as Billy. Did Billy mean that we should execute Tony Corrente? Like, Shank. It's not.
I think he meant that,
Billy,
actually.
Billy spoke for Billy in that instance.
I don't remember saying that.
That's crazy. Dan said that.
Chris Cody's response to this is because this is what's happened here, and I think the audience absorbed what happened here earlier as well. We let Markieff Morris skate here because we're Heat Homer show. He started all that. Now, Jokic ended
it. You sound like a Jokic brother.
Yeah, really.
Jokic ended it, but Markieff Morris, like, we could talk about how harmless that was, and Jokic himself said he was wrong, but it didn't escalate because Jokic escalated it with Morris.
He tried to end it, is what you're saying. Jokic, with an apology.
Please don't excuse what Jokic did there. That was
he was worse.
But all you can do after that is apologize.
I'm not.
There are a lot of people defending it, and I just don't get it. That's an NBA foul when you're trying to stop a break. Was there a little bit more to it? Yeah. I mean, what Ryan Cortez pointed out with Jokic's hard fouls on Bam Adebayo, that's a little payback. You don't wait till someone is running away from you, not knowing what's coming to do that. It's insanely dangerous.
Cowardly as well.
His reaction was outsized. That's the reason that people are reacting to it.
Well, he's also outside.
But so is he. And so are his brothers. And so are all of these people we're talking about. So much so. I remember, Stugatz, this is funny because I know people listening to this. Everybody's a tough guy listening to this. Look at these guys talking about this stuff. I remember when Udonis Haslam and David West squared off. I remember feeling fear, and I was watching on television.
I was at the arena that day. That happened, and there was a lady sitting in front of me, and I grabbed her pearls. I clutched at her pearls. She rose in front of me because I was scared. And just let's say the Jokic brothers come to this game in Miami. Would you want to be sitting a row in front of them?
I don't think anybody does. If you've seen the video of them, they look like rabid dogs. 6'9" rabid dogs.
They're hugely scary looking dudes.
Weren't they front row last time?
They were two rows back. They were climbing over a row in front of them.
If you're the Heat, you can't put them courtside. You can't do that.
If you're the Nuggets, you say you don't make this trip. It's all fun and jokes, but when you have some of the central figures being in the stands and being threatening, feeling like they have to live up to a reputation and protect family, it could get ugly real quick.
They should play the rematch in an octagon so that at the very least, the Jokic brothers have to scale the fence. That's the only solution. And it wouldn't cost that much money to put an octagon in the middle of the court. The only issue is that going to scar the court? But then you put down like a blanket or something.
You think that's going to help, huh?
Yeah.
I like it.
Of course.
That's a good
game
point.
A little bit. You don't want to mess up the court.
You thought of everything.
Well, not only did he think of everything, he also said, in the event that you have other options, this is the only solution.
Right.
He gave it a minute thought.
It's the best one.
He went through the catalog. I know you think you have a bunch of others, but I've got the one, and the only one is you got to lay down a blanket first and then an octagon. Right.
They should have to climb something. Thing to get on that court.
That's
to
what
get
I'm
into. Yes, I agree with that. Yes.
Right. Gotta work for it.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.